You're with SBS Radio.
Afgelopen woensdag hoorden jullie het eerste deel van een gesprek tussen journalist Joël Glas en de van Nederland afkomstige Eugene Blom, die al vanaf zijn 10e in Alice Springs woont en daar een bijzondere hobby heeft ontwikkeld. Hij is altijd op zoek naar de exacte locatie waarvan ooit in een historisch verleden een foto is gemaakt, om die dan nog eens een keer te nemen. Afgelopen woensdag had hij het over zijn Nederlandse wortels, maar vandaag speelt hij voor detective in de Outback.
So and now you retired early and you like being busy, and have you found an activity and a half, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been great. It started out me going, you know, all these people around me retiring and dying of cancer and stuff, bollocks, you know, like. When I worked out that I could survive without working, it was like, why would I work? So then it was like, Cindy, my wife still wanted to work, so I got all this free time, and it's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be the house elf, I'm supposed to do the work around the house, but I just do a quick wipe over and I'm free, you know, like the house elf, free. So I'd go and relive my youth and go, oh, I used to go here, or I haven't been here for years, let's go and have a look, see what's changed. And then I started taking photos and seeing what's changed, and that combined with my interest in like the family tree and trying to tie historical events to what I knew about my family to make it a personal story. Whenever I started looking online for photos like that around Alice Springs, especially if I saw these little quirky photos from hilltops where I'd been and most other people don't get to go, and places where I go, you know what, the average bunny doesn't know where that is. I know where it is. I've been there. You know, that secret feeling of, I know that, you know. I'm going to be a smart ass and I'm going to show people where that is, you know. So, yeah, and then between that and seeing online that people would post a photo and say, oh, I reckon that's so-and-so. And then someone would say, no, it's not, it's something else. Oh, I swear black and blue that my auntie told me or whatever. And all these people would be contradicting each other and just yelling out an opinion as if it mattered, and it didn't matter in the end. It was just so much shite. And so I thought, well, if I get a photo of exactly that spot and then show you that it's there, I have to be exact, because if it's approximate, people still get it wrong. So then I got interested in taking the exact same photo, and that then grew into, you know, my interest in who was that person taking that photo and why were they there? Like, you know, I'm on top of the hill because I'm an idiot and I like climbing, but, you know, in 1918, for example, I had a photo on top of the gap there. So he's 150 meters up in the air, a view out on a town that doesn't exist yet, with a guy who's prepared a glass plate. He's carrying this monstrous wooden box and a tripod up on top of a hill where I'm just, you know, hopping around like a wallaby. But he's really determined. Like, he's actually finding a spot for his tripod and taking a photo. And then I'm going, well, what was he here for? Oh, well, it was after the First World War and there was a Spanish flu epidemic. And so they sent a doctor to Central Australia to help out because they had no medical facilities. Or another one was from in the gap, and it shot down just on a peculiar corner, and it was like, I always wondered how much blasting they did in the gap to put the railway through, because people talked about it, and we can remember hearing them blasting even in the 70s when they were doing roadworks and stuff. So, you know, it was always a question, how much change really was there? And blow me down, here's a photo of exactly the corner where the railway goes through, before the railway. Wait, before the road. It's 1921. The guy who took the photo, Birtles, is like a famous movie star of his time because he's crossed Australia like 19 times already on a push bike, or he'd talk someone into giving him a car and saying, trust me, you're going to be famous. I've done this on the push bike. He made Dunlop Tires famous by saying, oh, we rode from Perth all the way to Sydney, you know, 3,000 miles. And so he did all these crossings, and then each time he'd look for a sponsor, and he talked the South Australian government into giving him money because he said, I'll come back with photos of pastures and stuff. I know a bit about mineralogy, so if I see any gold mines, I'll tell you about it. And I can take photos of where I reckon the railway line should go, because I know you guys want to build a railway line. And so this is 10 years before the railway was completed. And it was always going to be a question of how the hell are you going to get through the gap? And not many people with cameras floating around, so and he was interesting character because they described him as being an adventurer who was a keen photographer, whereas say another bloke I was following, Frank Hurley, professional photographer, he was a great photographer and he loved adventure. And blow me down, the bastards got together. And they actually drove a car from Brisbane to Darwin, sat in the car together. When Frank Hurley gets the telegram, Blackfella comes running out of the bush. And this is, Blackfella's a real term back in those days, right? Now, today we would say Aboriginal, but he describes it in his book as, you know, Blackfella comes out of the bush with a piece of paper and says, you know, hey boss, you got a telegram. And they're 50 miles away from the nearest town. And yeah, it was from Mawson saying, you want to go to the Antarctic and be my photographer?
And, amazing.
So Bertels is really jealous. And Frank Hurley goes on to be, you know, Australia's one of the most famous photographers. I think in the top 100, he's probably number six or something. Because he went to both world wars and drove around the place making amazing photographs. So yeah, it's a great hobby. And I post them on Facebook on House Elf Adventures, and people enjoy it. Part of it is me being a show off. Middle child, still looking for attention, you know.
Yes.
Now you can see that the hill doesn't stick up much from behind there, so he's actually down low. I mean, now you start to understand that these things in the way in the picture are actually him laying in the grass, trying to capture this photo down low so that the tree looks like it sweeps up over the hill rather than the hill actually swamping the picture, right? This is my first visit at this tree with this photo, so I'm not going to get an accurate photo straight off, you know. Like, it's a look, maybe once every 20 or 30 times I do a shot where I get it the first time, but mostly I have to take it back, overlay it on the computer and say, no, hang on, that thing I can see is actually that rock. For example, I can see a little bit of shadow and a rock through there. The trouble is that the tree is now much bigger. And so whilst you can see it on the original photo, the way to line it up is to hide it behind the tree, in which case you don't see it anymore. So it's all these sort of tricks of, geez, now what do I do? And you know what? Camera doesn't matter. The lens doesn't matter. And people will tell you, oh, maybe the old days the lens was different. Nope, the lens gets you a wider shot or a narrower shot. It's just like property, location, location, location. If you're in the right spot, everything lines up. You can't make things line up from two directions with a different lens. It's just a practical thing. You have to be in the right spot. If I've got a photo and I go, well, it's 120 years old, and that tree doesn't look any different, you know. And sometimes this is true. There are trees up on the ridge on the mountains. In a country that gets 250 millimetres of water a year, if you're on a hilltop, you catch about 50 millimetres and even that splashes away. So a tree that looks the same as it did 120 years ago, and you think, well, it's increased in its size about 10-15%, it's barely perceptible. You go, hell, that tree was 350 years old then. It's not even a big tree, and it still survives, and its branches are in the same position, and it's still looking overlooking the same landscape. And it's like a privilege just to stand and be in that spot. And in some ways it's similar when you think about the photographer, and you say, who was this guy? Well, why was he here? What was he doing here? The guy who took this photo, 60 years old, he's been through both wars taking photos, he's a professional photographer, he's in Alice Springs with this idea in his head that everything is historic and that what he's doing is important. And he leaves his entire negative collection to the museum or the State Library Archives, where I'm looking at it years later, appreciating it. He even has photos of him and his wife, who's also almost 60, on top of Mount Gillon with a crinkly old stick and a standard old lady sort of dress, you know. And you think, my God, like, they climbed Mount Gillon before there was a road up there. It's about 300 metres and it overlooks Alice Springs.
It's a steep climb.
And he took some great photos overlooking Alice Springs, which I find very useful because it has some great scenes in it that have been photographed by other photographers. And those scenes are difficult to find now, so that helps me place some of the photos that I've had in my little shoebox for a long time. So this other photo is different in that I don't know where it is. I knew where this tree was because I've ridden past it so many times, and I've always admired the tree. And then when I saw it online, it was just exciting to go, I know where that is. So that's the little boy in me knowing where things are. And it just gives me a great feeling of, I know the secret, you know. I'm the boy who's been all over these hills, and I remember being there. I know roughly where that is. I'll find it, you know. So I'll carry the little secret that I know where it is and no one else does. And then when I show it, it's like, see, I know where it is. Now everyone knows.
Fascinating. Okay, we're walking through shrub, rocks, ancient old rocks, which help Eugene with his photos. They don't move place, of course.
Whereas the trees... The trees die, the trees grow in front of the scene, the bushes grow in front of the scene so that you can't see anything anymore. And the buffalo grass covers everything. Here's a lovely old tree.
Yeah.
Native orange. You know, they evolved to deal with megafauna. Giant.
Yes, yes.
You know, not rhinoceros-sized wombats ate the fruit. And after the big megafauna died out, nothing ate it for millions of years.
So
until the Aborigines came. So, you know, 30,000, 40,000 years ago when the Aborigines came, they said, oh, this is a good bush tucker. Now, you can't build a building near one, you can't dig one up or knock it over if you need to get a road through because it's sacred, women's business.
It's okay, well, protected, yes.
Yeah, look, as a generalisation, you know, it's food and it's the sort of hunter-gatherer stuff that the women found important, so... So while the men were out having fun chasing kangaroos, the women were harvesting stuff that's easy to get near the campsite. So generally, native orange is women's business.
Yep.
And you leave it alone.
Okay, on we go. We made it to the top of a ridge with Mount Gillon in view.
Yeah, so I've gotten pretty good at reading the landscape. See how the ridgeline takes a dip, and it's in front of, it's right behind this little mound hill there. Well, at the moment, that hill there is far to the left of it,
so
which means that it is up there. So we're left at least 100 metres. Yeah, the Aborigines call this Corkwood Hill. So the Corkwoods have been on this hill for forever. Now, have a look at that same ridge and see how that hill is in front of the dip. And so he was somewhere right here, right? Very close.
Yes, yeah.
So we're very close. And also what you see here is a sort of a flat spot. And I reckon that this was a flat stop spot long before they built a car park out of it.
Yeah, we're on the bitumen now on the edge of the car park.
Yeah, so if we climb over the railing, we're also looking at a slightly higher...
Yes.
Lump on the left.
Okay.
And down there, it's still a bit of a lump. And so I reckon we can find those rocks.
Okay.
And again, you could be really unlucky.
Yeah.
There's one over near the local witch's house, you know, Olive Pink. So when I'm thinking...
local
kids,
witch.
Yeah. So, you know, when these photos were taken, just after the war, is when Olive Pink was here. And she was a... She was your archetypal witch. Any community has a single woman who's outspoken and dresses in a peculiar fashion. She had high lace-up things and she always wore gloves and she had a fly thing over her hat. And she did strange manly things like ride camels and go and live out bush with Aborigines and try and do the anthropology stuff. And she was always angry at the white fellas because she said, you know, you people think that you come here and you offer... the Aborigines the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and what do? You take away their religion, you make them go to church, and you take all their lands, you send cattle in to wreck all the water holes. They can't live their traditional life, so they take away their freedom and their religion, you know. So she saw that it was all wrong, but that's because she came from Tasmania, where the Quakers had seen all the Tasmanian Aborigines go, and they were all still slashing their own wrists over that when she came here to see what there was to salvage. So there's a hill just behind her house, which has this magnificent old fig tree, and there's a cleft in the rocks, and when you go there, you go, oh, look, a cubby, and you know that when you then overlook the town from a secret place that you can't see from town, within a stone's throw from the witch's roof, that in the 40s there were kids there, and you'll hear tales of people that, you know, she got a shotgun and shot them with saltpeter, and, you know, she got very angry at people throwing rocks on her roof because it was like that scary witch over there. What should we do? Let's throw a rock on her roof.
Did you ever meet her? Were you two?
No, she died in the 70s.
You were a little too young then.
I'd only been here a few years.
And yeah.
If I'd heard from her, I was in a different part of town. She lived in the old part of town here, and we were right in the outskirts.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's a great legend of this town. Yeah.
It's a great story, and thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. I like showing off.
Hear more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.